50,000-watt News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 11th of February, Anno Domini 2007, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Lintott.
Who managed eventually to press the button. He's looking at me like, oh, here we go.
Get down, get funky.
Get up, take a shower. Very nice. To stay alive. The beat goes on. Yes, indeed.
Yeah, the master volume's a little low today.
Yeah, it is a little bit, isn't it?
We don't have a master volume. Just talk louder.
That's what we're doing. Trust me, I can do that. Microsoft is coming up with its monthly visitor this week. Should happen on Tuesday. They're patching a dozen security bulletins, including 5 updates meant to fix critical Windows flaws as part of its monthly Patch Tuesday updating process February 13th.
We got to say which product it's patching, because technically there's 2 products out there now, Vista and XP.
Right. Well, this is all still for XP. You won't see a Vista update until they acknowledge there are problems with it. Microsoft will deliver.
Oh, don't do that.
Wow. Well, yeah, do that quote from Bill Gates on Jon Stewart, The Daily Show, railing against the Apple TV commercials. Oh, there are exploits that come out every single day for the Mac that give you total control over the Mac. I dare you to find one in a month for Windows.
I like the new. Yeah. I got to admit, I like the new Mac commercial.
The IT, the security guy?
The security guy. Yeah. I love that one. Have you seen that one?
No, I don't think I've seen that one.
Oh. There's the two, you know, the Mac PC guy.
Right, right.
Behind the PC guy is this tall guy.
Oh, I have seen him.
Yeah.
The thing in his ear and, yeah.
Yeah.
Mac is issuing greetings, allow or deny.
Yeah. Right.
You're coming
right
to a sad realization, allow or deny.
At any rate, Microsoft plans to patch at least 5 issues with the operating system that have been ranked critical, which is its most severe vulnerability rating, and to address an additional pair of critical flaws in its Office productivity suite. The Patch Tuesday preview on their website does not offer specific details on the problem it plans to fix. But be prepared, this Tuesday there will be rebooting.
Yep.
So that's what's going to happen there.
It'll now watch out when those automatic updates come down. You still want to uncheck IE7 for now. Yeah.
Right. Because you still don't want to get IE7 yet. That's going to be tough. But
well,
yeah,
there's even QuickBooks. They've got massive warnings all over their website not to use IE7, because it'll mess up your QuickBooks data.
Yep.
Right. So you want to be very careful right now. If you use any non-Microsoft product, you want to be very careful of IE7, and you want to be very careful of Vista.
Even some of Microsoft's own products don't work.
Well, that's true.
I got it. My story.
We'll wait for your story. We'll wait. You're in here. We'll get you for the story. Let me remind everybody that
we might need an expanded hour for that.
Yeah, that's going to be a good one then. All right.
Oh, yeah.
Let's get to the phones. We'll start with Dave from Lyons, New York. Welcome, Dave. What's your question?
Yeah, good morning, guys. I bought a Sprint modem for the wireless.
Sure.
The wireless deal. And I've been trying to set up the connection manager. It's called the connection manager. And I try to install it, and it gives me an error, a 1722. And I Google it, and it takes me to the Java site. And apparently there's something going on there where the Windows installer isn't doing something right. Well, to make a long short, I did what they told me to do. I basically reinstalled that Java update.
Yep.
And it does the same exact thing. And I did set the program up on my laptop after I got done, you know, pulling my hair out, and it worked fine. So I don't know. It's got to be something else, I'm thinking.
Well, what's the difference between your desktop and your laptop?
The desktop I have is fully updated, and the laptop isn't. I have SP1 in the laptop, and I have SP2 in the
desktop.
Well,
is the desktop, though, wireless?
Well, he's trying to get it that way.
Yeah, that's. I'm trying to install the connection manager so that I could plug my modem into my USB and get going, but it doesn't get to the installation doesn't complete.
Well, backing up half a step. It's usually a lot easier if you use these high speed routers and plug it into the Ethernet port instead of trying to load modem drivers for it.
Yeah,
use it as an Ethernet network router, and it's a lot easier.
Well, that's the LAN connection. It's a
right.
USB.
What you're looking for is that Sprint wireless cell phone modem thing.
Yeah, actually, it's called a. I got the box. I'm taking it back right now, actually, because on my laptop, it wanted to upgrade the firmware, and it screwed that up somehow, and it doesn't even work. I mean, it's a really good thing. I used it for about 30 seconds, and then I got a taste of the speed that I can get out of it, but then it. Tried to update the firmware and it messed up the modem. So I'm on my way to Sprint right now, but it's a U720 wireless from Novatel.
Well, what it sounds like is
it's WLAN, not Wi-Fi.
Right.
Okay. There's too many wirelesses.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, this is wireless broadband, not wireless networking.
Right.
Wi-Fi. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Very confusing.
It may well be that it's a bad device. I mean, you may have just gotten a bad device, but it's odd that it would install. It installed under Service Pack 1, but not under Service Pack 2.
Yes.
The reality is, there's a lot of things that don't install under Service Pack 2.
Could I uninstall Service Pack 2, and try to install it then, and then put Service Pack 2 back in?
Yeah, you could give it a shot. Yeah.
Well, if the Service Pack 2 uninstaller is still in your Add Remove programs.
Yeah, you just go to down the bottom of Add Remove, and you'll see Service Pack 2.
Right. I thought about that.
Yeah.
But I also remembered that you were telling me how I could reinstall Windows without screwing anything else up, and it would replace all the files that might be bad.
Yeah, you're installing Windows over Windows is what you wanted to do.
Now, did you say it worked in SP1 and not in SP2, or
yes.
The other way around?
No, it works in SP1 at my laptop, but my desktop, which I keep updated, it won't install.
Yeah.
It takes me to that, I Googled that error, and it took me to the Java.
Yeah, try doing the uninstall SP2 and see what happens. I mean, worst case scenario, you just have to put SP2 back in. I mean, it only takes a few minutes.
Yeah.
All right. High speed.
We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Sound Bites. It is 16 minutes after the hour, and we'll be back on 1180 WHAM.
Call Wham now.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Benright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 20 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Sound Bites. And I'm looking at the thing, making sure it's on.
Yeah, how long we've been doing this?
How long did I wait for it to come on at the beginning of the show?
You high maintenance talent, you know what I'm saying?
It doesn't come on at all. I just have to guess.
Yeah, right. You can't hear your light at all.
Or actually, my light's been off all these years, and I'm just not on the air.
Well, that's what we're hoping you hadn't figured out. There's for those of you who are using Trend Micro antivirus products, there is a dangerous buffer overflow flaw in it that was reported by Trend Micro and confirmed by security researchers at iDefense Labs. Researchers at Secunia also posted an advisory on this vulnerability and have deemed it to be highly critical. This flaw can be exploited in both Windows and Linux systems and could be used to gain access to machines, cause DOS, denial of service activity, and allow attackers total control of affected systems. Trend Micro responded to the vulnerability by pushing out a patch that a company spokesperson said fixes the issue. We have seen no cases in the wild, but Trend Micro moved quickly on this because, like others, we understand the highly critical nature of this issue, said a spokesperson. The vulnerability targets all scan engine and pattern file technology in Trend Micro products. In Windows, the scan engine runs in kernel context, and under Linux, the scan engine runs as a daemon with super user privileges, hence the ability to have complete system control. iDefense reports the following configurations are vulnerable. Trend Micro's PC Cillin Internet Security 2007, VSAPIINI.sys, which is the scan engine version 3.320, etc. Server Protect for Linux version 2.5 on Red Hat Enterprise Linux 4.x, and VSAPI APP version 8.310. So if you are using a Trend Micro product, make sure you're doing the auto updates because the patch was available within 24 hours of the report of the problem. So check your logs. Make sure that if you are using a Trend Micro antivirus product, it is indeed updated. All right, our next caller is Gator from Dansville. Welcome, Gator. What's your question?
Hi. I've got a modem in my computer, and I'm trying to connect it in Ubuntu. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to configure that to get it to work. Anything I do, it won't see it. It sees the modem in Device Manager,
yep,
but it won't connect.
Is this a Win modem?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
yeah, that's
the chipset.
Yeah, that's the problem. The Win modem
never worked with much of anything.
Right. Mm-hmm. The problem with the Win modem is that it requires certain Windows libraries to be available before it will work. It is truly designed specifically to work only under Windows. That's how they make it so cheap. All of the smarts are actually part of the Windows operating system and not in the modem.
There's an oxymoron.
I've also got a U.S. Robotics hardware modem.
You'd be
better. It wouldn't see that one at all.
Does it say it's a hardware modem, or does it say it's a Win modem?
It's a hardware modem. This is a U.S. Robotics one.
Yeah, it's hardware one.
It should work.
Yeah.
Yeah, it won't even see that at all, Ubuntu. And this is a 606 release. And I was just wondering, I've got a driver for it. I went to get a driver for the Win modem.
Right.
And how can I install that in Ubuntu? If I can't get on, I can't download it.
Right. There's a program called Slow Modem D, S-L-O Modem D, Slow Modem D, which lets your Win modem work. What you're going to need to do is get a friend to download it for you and either put it on a floppy disk or a CD or a thumb disk, a thumb drive, and get it on your machine that way. Once you do that, you should be okay.
I found some stuff in the Ubuntu forums giving links to drivers for Win modems for Ubuntu.
Right.
Yeah, I got the driver on a Windows system, but if I put it on disk, can I put it in Ubuntu?
Sure, you should be able to do that. Even easier would be if you've got a thumb drive.
Uh-huh.
Stick
I don't have a thumb drive.
So. All right. Then you can put it on a floppy and mount the floppy, or you can put it on a CD or those are the two ways to do it, really, at this point.
Okay.
To either burn a CD or put it on a floppy. Those are the ways to do it. But I think once you get those drivers running, you should be fine.
Okay. That's the problem. I can't get the driver in it.
Right, right.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you very much for your information.
No, You're welcome. You and good luck. I love to see somebody else playing around with Ubuntu, and we'll see how he does. It is very hard to get some of those drivers when they require Windows pieces to work. Our next caller is Tom from Greece, New York. Welcome, Tom. What's your question?
Good morning. I've been listening to you guys for years, and it seemed to get about one question a year where I run into a problem, and this is my time. Matter of fact, the last time I talked to you guys was in April when I was in China. So.
Wow. All right. What's your question?
Oh, I remember when you called.
Yeah, I remember when you called. Sure.
Yeah. Well, my problem is for Christmas, I bought myself a new wireless router.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had it in for, you know, about 4 or 5 weeks now. It runs great up until about a week ago. And it seems like it's slowing down. I a lot of times it doesn't connect. And I don't know about how I would go ahead troubleshooting this thing.
Well, it may not be you. If you're talking about connecting to other sites on the Internet.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Internet's got a problem right now. There have been a couple of people who've tried to take down the Internet by hitting all the main domain name servers on the Internet. They did not take it down, but they slowed it down considerably. And that's happened in the last week and a half, maybe. And so there's been a lot of slowdown. A lot of times you can't connect to sites you want to go to. But it's not you. It's not your Internet service provider. It's these guys hitting the net. And they've been beefing up the servers and taking down the attacking servers as fast as they can get to them. But, of course, they keep putting more up. So we're playing leapfrog right now. But it's if I understand your question correctly, it's not you. It's the same problem that's been happening.
Yeah, about a week and a half. That's about how long it's been happening.
There you go. So it's likely not you.
Oh, very good.
All right.
Well, that's my yearly question, I think.
Well, there you go. And this one was easy. Thank you.
All right. There's a neat website called the Internet Traffic Report that tells you how congested the Internet is. And right now in North America, we're running at an 8% packet loss. 8% of all the data being transmitted is lost.
Is lost, yeah. And that's due to this thing. They're hitting. There are domain name servers. When you type in, for example, soundbites.org, well, there is the internet doesn't understand soundbites.org. It understands a number, and that gets translated.
It's like the phone book. You look up a name, it gives you the number you have to dial.
Right. Soundbites.org gets translated to 64.177.228.149. But it's a domain name server that does that translation. And if the server is too busy, you can't get a translation, and so you can't connect. It's like, I can't find this house, and I'm not going to spend any more time looking for it, you know, with a regular letter. Listen, we're going to take a quick break. The mighty Glenn Lamberts will be in to give you the news, the weather, the sports, all the real reasons you listen to Wham. And we'll be back in just a few minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Rob Linton, with me, Nick Francesco. We've got all of you folks quietly waiting. We'll talk about Apple, Steve Jobs calling for the end of digital restriction management. And we'll all do all of that when we come back. It's 28 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
When the Wham's Michael Savage.
Good many of you think I'm talentless. I don't deserve the show. He's done it for 14 years. Big deal. He has big ratings. Big deal. He's written four bestsellers. Who cares?
Weeknights 8 till 11 on Wham.
I really can't stay.
Baby, it's cold outside.
Oh, I'd way rather listen to this than talk. But we're back. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
He's Steve Ray.
But he's leaving. So you're...
He's leaving.
Yeah.
You want? I can be now.
Yeah, I got a friend of mine, very close friends of our family, are leaving town, and we're having a going away luncheon dim sum buffet for them. And, of course, my wife scheduled it for 12 o'clock.
Yeah, sure. Of course she did.
So to everyone, I'll be listening on the road. I'll be calling in if I need to.
You're right.
Actually, I should stay because you're going to do the Steve Jobs thing now, aren't you?
Yeah, we are. So he's going to stay there now. And you are?
Rob Linton.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites.
Rob Linton, but he's awful. He's starting to look like Elvis, though.
Will you stop it?
Those mutton chops.
I do not have the
mutton. You are starting to grow mutton chops.
You just didn't shave this morning.
I haven't shaved all weekend. That's a beautiful thing about radio.
Yeah,
I mean, you should see the
little
four
baby
of us.
Face.
He's got the little fuzz going.
The kidding, you know,
I often wonder why I come here every
Sunday.
Nick
did shave this morning, and that's what happens.
All right, Apple CEO Steve Jobs has a message for consumers and antitrust regulators claiming the company has locked people into its iTunes music store. Don't blame us. Blame the music companies. On Tuesday, the technology firm called for media companies to allow the sale of music without digital rights management, DRM, or as we call it, digital restriction management, that prevents copying, saying the copyright protection technologies have not stopped piracy and only stunted the demand for purchasing music online. Although Apple is making money hands over fist with iTunes, apparently it stunted the desire to purchase music online. In an essay posted on Apple's website, Jobs outlined three possible futures and highlighted the sale of DRM music, free music, as the best alternative. Why would the big four music companies agree to let Apple and others distribute their music without using DRM technologies to protect it? The simplest answer is because DRMs haven't worked and may never work to halt music piracy. Though the big four music companies require that all their music sold online be protected with DRMs, these same music companies continue to sell billions of CDs a year, which contain completely unprotected music. Convincing them to license their music to Apple and others DRM-free will create a truly interoperable music marketplace, Jobs said in the essay. Apple will embrace this wholeheartedly. So Apple would be delighted to get rid of digital restriction management in their products. Now, as we know, Sony had a 14-month series of lawsuits that just ended last month about installing DRM software on consumer PCs that hit itself and caused security vulnerabilities. It acted more like a virus than anything else.
And the chief of Warner Music, Edgar Bronfman, has responded to Jobs's issue, saying that Jobs is basically dumb,
full of it,
yeah. And it's his fight is without logic. And so what if 90% of the music sales are unprotected on CDs? CDs are a legacy product that he implied they're not going to bother with anymore. So apparently Warner is going to try to do the same thing Sony did and come out with copy-protected CDs.
All they have to do is screw up one person's machine and the lawsuits begin.
Yep. So it's interesting, the fight between what the consumers want and what the music industry wants. And Jobs sort of went through this a little bit when they announced the iTunes Store about good karma. You know, it's just good karma to buy your music because the main argument is that the record companies steal all the money from the artists, but at least the artists get a little bit, so right. It's better than nothing.
Right. Well, we'll see. We'll continue to follow this, but I would love to be able to say, you know, I don't need to worry about it one way or the other.
And there already are ways to strip the DRM from the stuff you buy from iTunes. Just burn a CD.
Right.
And the argument that Apple should license their FairPlay so that other devices can play iTunes music, Jobs says in his letter that I've posted links on our site as well, said in his letter, as soon as they license it, someone could easily steal it because that means they have to publicly make that available. And as soon as someone breaks the copy protection, Apple will probably get sued by the music companies.
Right.
Or allowing that to happen.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so, you know, they're stuck both ways. If
it's not about the music and about the lawsuits for any of them.
Double-edged sword.
About the music or the customer. It's all about the lawsuits.
Yeah. And we consumers almost end up getting hurt in the end.
Always. That's what we do. We get hurt. I've been hurt before. I'll be hurt again. All right. You have to go. I don't want Shirley mad at me.
Yeah.
We're sending him on, Shirley. We are. He's gone.
Well, she hasn't left the house yet either, so I'm safe.
You're closer.
Yeah.
So now you got at least a 10-minute head start on her.
Yeah.
Great. It's Cannonball Run starring Steve and Shirley Ray. This will be good. All right. Thanks, Steve. Our next caller is John from Penfield. Welcome, John. What's your question?
I've been trying to download a trial version of Microsoft Office 2007, a small business edition.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's a pretty big download, and I get into it, and the best I can do is get 50 to maybe 65 megabytes before it just stops.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried all different things, but I don't know how to get it down.
Are you on a broadband connection or dial-up?
No, I'm broadband. I'm a Frontier DSL, and I'm pretty close to the hub, so when I do my speed test, it's usually over 4 megabits.
Well, of course, that has nothing to do with the way it's really going to be on the... I mean, it's the machine on the other end that determines how fast your download is.
Yeah.
So what, it just drops the connection after 50 or 60 meg?
It just stops downloading. Yeah. It the transfer rate that tells me is like 634 kilobytes a second.
Mm-hmm.
And I've tried bypassing my router, going straight to the DSL modem, and that helps a little bit. I get a little farther into the download, but all I do is I get the best I've done is 65 megabits, bytes, and it just stops.
Yeah,
nothing else.
I'm afraid that there's not anything you can do about that. That is entirely on the other, unless of course you've only got 50 or 60 meg free on your hard drive. You have checked to see that your hard drive
I've got 80 gigabyte free in my hard drive.
All right, then. It's not that. So the problem has got to be something at the other end. And I'm sorry. I wish there were a better answer for you than that. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Viacom, who owns the cable networks MTV, VH1, Nickelodeon, the Paramount Pictures Movie Studio, and Comedy Central, have asked YouTube to remove more than 100,000 unauthorized clips from its hugely popular video sharing site. Viacom issued a statement saying that after several months of talks with YouTube and its corporate parent, the online research leader Google, it has become clear that YouTube is unwilling to come to a fair market agreement that would make Viacom content available to YouTube users. That's lawyer speak for Google wouldn't pay Viacom to put their stuff online. Viacom said that YouTube and Google had failed to deliver on several filtering tools to control unauthorized video from appearing on the hugely popular site. The company is now asking YouTube to take the clips down, but they stopped short of filing a lawsuit. Under federal copyright law, online services such as YouTube are generally immune from liability as long as it responds to takedown requests such as these, which YouTube often does. Less clear legally is what happens when another user posts the same video, something commonly done on these sites. YouTube said that in a statement that it would comply with the request from Viacom, instead of cooperates with all copyright holders to identify and promptly remove infringing content as soon as we are officially notified. And therefore, that's the end of somebody saying around the water cooler, did you hear what Jon Stewart said last night? Here, let's go find it on YouTube.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the end of that. All right, we're going to go. It's kind of the end of an era. We're going to go back to the phones. We're going to talk to Greg from Holly, New York. Welcome, Greg. What's your question?
Hi, I've got three PCs networked together here at home, and two XPs and a 98.
Mm-hmm.
And my Sunday morning routine is get up, make a pot of coffee, and walk around each of them and do the security tango.
Excellent.
So one of the things I've noticed over the months and years of doing it is it appears sometimes that if I switch accounts, I get quite a few more hits, especially on Adware.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So my question is, usually I just use my own account. Does mm-hmm. that cover everybody else's account when you
nope.
run those?
No, you got to do each account on each machine.
Well, if you do it as the administrator, you should get everybody.
No, because then each individual is still, because the administrator under documents and settings has its folder.
Right.
Then each individual user has their own folder under documents and settings, and that's where a lot of stuff hides. That's why you've got to run it under each person.
Okay. Now, that would be both Adware and SpyBot need to be run.
Yep, under each user. That's what we do for every machine in our shop. We hit, and we love it when folks bring it in and they've got seven users.
Yeah,
and it takes us forever, and each one will always find something.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I noticed. A lot of times my daughter's logged on to one of the PCs, and if I happen to run hers
mm-hmm.
and haven't run it for 3 or 4 weeks, there seems to be an awful lot of hits that I normally don't see in the other PCs. So
yep.
that's why I was...
Yeah, that's the reason.
Okay.
Yepper.
Sorry.
Guess I'll make a bigger pot of coffee.
Yes, so. Right. Thanks. Thanks, Greg.
Well, one thing we should be able to tell folks, we got to modify it on the Soundbites website, though, is because Stinger should be taken out of there now. Because with all the updates and everything else, you know, just not needed any longer.
Right.
I mean, they still got to do the other parts, but yep.
All right. Our next caller is Bob from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Soon, I'll be upgrading to Vista.
Right.
Whenever they send me my software. But in the meantime, I want to make sure that I don't have any problems with my Thunderbird and Firefox.
Thunderbird and Firefox work fine under Vista.
Okay, so I don't need to back them up or anything.
Yes. Oh, you need to back up everything before you put in
everything.
Vista.
All right. Just because, wait a minute, just because you're going to, you know, go to Vista, you know, and I say, yes, Firefox and Thunderbird are going to work correctly.
Right.
It doesn't mean the rest of the system is going to work correctly.
Okay.
Yeah. Back up, back up.
Okay. So how do you save all the emails under Thunderbird? How do you save all the URLs under Firefox?
You can export.
Under both programs?
Yeah.
Right. File export, and you'll be able to save them as whatever file you want, and once you've done that, you'll be able to bring them back in at some later point. Not a problem.
Back them up okay. to a thumb drive or something like that.
Right. So when you do file export on both those programs, you're actually saving emails on Thunderbird, and you're actually
yes.
saving URLs
yep.
on Firefox.
In
yep.
fact, under Firefox, it's under bookmarks, manage bookmarks, and then file export. But there's a file export right under the other one, so you'll be able to do whatever you need to do. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It'll be Story Hour with Uncle Dave at 50 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Back.
Dave, tell the next folks about Frontier.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm in a daze. What can I say? Kind of dead there, and I'm still trying to get used to that. But yeah, I should talk about it. And oh man, I got a great story for this week. You know, I wish I could really use, and I don't want to embarrass folks, you really use their names, but I was over at another client's place, and I happened to know the young lady. I'll just call her Mrs. Smith. But for the longest time, they were on the old dial-up. And it was Frontier dial-up. And they were, you know, they were doing okay with it, and the kids and they were kind of happy with it. But now that their kids have moved into high school, well, they finally moved over, and they got the Frontier DSL. And what a difference it's making. And they even noticed it even more right now with the, you know, these kids. One of the kids got a brand new laptop for Christmas, and trying to do some of the updates for Vista is literally was killing them, you know, trying to do it over dial-up. They just wouldn't have had it. So with the new DSL just connecting, it's just a breeze. And she just kept following me around the house because I was literally hooking up 7 different computers in this home for the family, and each husband and wife had their own, and then they got the family computer in there, and I just went around, and she kept following me around. Thank you, thank you. Oh, this is great. It's so fast. It's so fast. And now if somebody gets on here, is that going to slow them down? You just tell them no. Well, what if I need help? Well, that's the beauty, folks. They're there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So, you know, on our say-so, call Frontier and tell them that you want to get hooked up to Frontier DSL.
This is Wham's Bill Lau. Want the news but can't be by the radio? Then punch up wham1180.com for in-depth team coverage. It's Wham News online at wham1180.com.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
And I'm Rob Linton.
I got to apologize, Rob. I screwed up on that one because I'm sitting here trying to also turn on and off the program for Steve's recording. So,
all right, it is 55 minutes after the hour, and now, kids, sit back and relax. Get on your footy jammies, grab your teddy bears and your hot cocoa, sit in a little circle around there on the floor, around the old rocking chair, because if we can wake him up, it's story hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
I'll tell you, I am exhausted.
Yeah, bet you are.
After this week, I don't even want to say the pleasure, because it wasn't!
No, I bet it wasn't.
I built myself a Vista box.
Ooh.
And I built Vista Ultimate. If I'm going to do it, I want all the bells and whistles to play with it. So, because we're going to get more and more systems in.
Right.
In fact, I had one lady bring in a machine. She tried to do the Vista upgrade.
Yeah, she wasn't even close.
It wiped out her whole hard drive.
Yep.
And one thing folks should be aware of, that because if you're going to do the upgrade and you go ahead and, you know, you get the download and you start doing it, what it will do is once you install the Vista, there's no going back to XP. Because one of the things it does is void your license for XP. So once you register the Vista, the old license for that particular XP is then nulled and void.
Right.
You can no longer do it. But going back to my experience, all right, now I've got a dual core 4200, 2 gig of memory. I thought 80 gig hard drive should be good. Ultima took over 10 gig.
Right.
A 256 meg PCI Express video card still wouldn't work correctly, even though it had Vista drivers.
Yeah.
Now, you want to talk about getting frustrated, and I'm not even getting into any of the other programs yet.
Right, right. All right.
I am still... this is to be continued.
All right. We're going to give Uncle Dave a shot now, and all you kids, put away your... There we go. Not that kind of shot. That's not exactly what we were talking about. But we're done with another story hour from Uncle Dave. Before we go, I do want to talk a little bit about the archive site. We have, as you may have noticed, one or two of you have noticed that the archive site is actually down, and there is the hard drive is dead. And I know I could just buy a hard drive and stick it in there and do all of that. But what I was trying to do was move both Soundbites itself and the archive server to another machine where it would be a bigger, faster, better, blah, 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 blah. And I've been having some trouble with that because the Soundbites databases are so large that I'm having trouble getting them moved with any sort of efficiency. Things keep getting dropped out and problems happen, and we seem to be having a problem with that. So I may end up buying a drive and sticking it in that old machine anyway, just to get the archives back up while I still fool around with this. But then, of course, I'm stuck with a hard drive that I got to find somewhere to put. Not that that's a huge hardship, but I did waste an entire week trying to move everything over and do it right
in your spare time.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's that. But I've been trying to do that. And we'll have to figure out what we can do otherwise. We're going to take a little break now. Glenn Lamberts, the mighty Glenn Lamberts, is in. He's going to be bringing you the news, the weather, the sports, all the important information. And then we will come back on the other side. When we come back, we will talk about the poll and about Microsoft's Vista tech support costs and how they're going up. We'll be back in just a few minutes. We have Dave Enright. We have Rob Linton, who is desperately trying to keep us on the straight and narrow, and we're avoiding responsibility as much as possible. Rob, did you ever figure you would actually end up being the adult supervision anywhere, ever?
That was part of the job description when I was hired.
Well,
it was going to be easy.
You're doing yeoman service, but we're like kindergartners at recess. We're done now. I'm Nick Francesco, and it is 59 minutes after the hour. When we come back, we've also got a couple of people waiting on the line.
Now, the Wham Weather Authority forecast.
Mostly cloudy today. Highs in the with a high of 26. Tuesday, bitterly cold. Lake snow showers. A high temperature Tuesday, a high temperature of 12. And it will fall down into the low single digits Tuesday night. Wednesday, snow, continued cold. A high of 18 degrees. 13 WHAM radar, not showing any major precipitation. Some spits of snow here and there in Monroe County. Right now we have some sunshine, some distinct shadows on the building just across the street here as I gaze out the window. Downtown, Rob told me a second ago what the temperature was. 21, thank you, Rob Linton. Now let's get back to the winners of the 1980 bobsled event at Lake Placid. Nick Francesco and Dave Enright on Soundbites. I'm Glenn Lamberts on Rochester's news leader, News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Thousand-watt News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 9 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Glenn, it was luge.
Luge. I can never remember the difference. You know, but, the luge is the small sled, right?
Right,
yeah. But you know what? I had the experience this past summer.
Mm-hmm.
I was up at Lake Placid.
Right.
First time I've ever seen, you see it on TV.
But that ski jump?
That ski jump.
I knew you were going there. Yep.
Holy
You
crap.
Jump off that?
Yeah, right.
I'm way down here, man. And I'm just looking at the top of where they're jumping from. I was getting dizzy just looking up.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And these idiots go farther up the mountain to come down it.
Yeah. Actually, the Olympic winter event that always fascinated me most was the biathlon. Ski like mad, throw yourself down on your stomach, shoot something, get up and ski some more. It's like the platypus of the Olympic events. They just stuck stuff together.
One of the most difficult of all sports, of course, is Nordic ski racing. I mean, it's right up there with marathon running and cycle racing. Most fit athletes in the world. Now, anyone who's done any target shooting knows it's very difficult to hold the rifle yourself and hit the target. So put together an extremely strenuous event with the target shooting, and that's what you have.
I understand that it is a very difficult event. It's just the first time I saw it, I thought, well, this is random. And it's not, of course. I mean, grew out of this is how you hunt.
Training, that's right, and this is
and
how,
this is
you,
how
train.
You train for winter combat. Right. I understand where it came from. Yeah. It just looks so random.
I think it was Norway.
That's
what pops into my mind, Norway. But
I think you're right.
Yeah. Well, unless somebody, you know, Googles it now and
challenges
us. Who knows?
Right, I'm sure there's somebody in the chat telling us we're wrong right now.
Hey, I'm going home now. Is that okay?
Yeah, go for it. Knock yourself out.
See you, bud.
We are running a chat, of course. The link is actually in our list of links from a couple of weeks ago. If you go to the Soundbites website, click on links, click on the sites you heard about on the show. It's a couple of weeks ago. You'll see new chat software with more users.
And it's also in the forums. Steve put in the forums.
Right.
A link to the chat site.
All right, let's talk a little bit about what goes on at our website. That's soundbites.org. Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Every week we do a poll. Last week's poll was about watching TV shows on YouTube, which, of course, now you won't be able to do so much of. 343 of you voted, making it number 92 on the all-time hit list, thanks to each and every one of you. The winner was 44% said YouTube, 39% said rarely, 12% said once in a while, and 15 of you said all the time. This week's poll is about a new report. Microsoft has significantly raised what it charges retail customers for technical support for its latest software, Windows Vista and Office 2007, while narrowing the help offered to users. As of January 30th, customers who buy full retail copies of Vista and Office 2007 will get unlimited calls, emails, and web chats with Microsoft technical support during the first 90 days after activating the software. But after that period, customers contacting Microsoft for help with Vista will pay $59 per incident, up from $35. For technical assistance with Office, customers will pay $49 per incident, also up from $35. Previously, Microsoft offered unlimited support to customers with problems installing Office or Windows for as long as they use the software. Customers also could get help on two additional support incidents of any kind for free. Customers with existing software who have not used up their free calls to Microsoft can still use them. Microsoft realized last year that its support prices were lower than those charged by competitors, including Best Buy's Geek Squad, CompUSA's TechPro, Circuit City's FireDog, and dedicated service providers such as PlumChoice. Our $35 price is at least a decade old, Microsoft said. We were underpriced, both in terms of the value our customers felt they were getting, as well as the prices the third-party service providers were charging. So that they feel we're barely in line with the lowest prices our competitors are charging. Wham, 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 wham. They're not making enough money off of this new software, so they have to raise their prices. Anyway, Microsoft is going to charge you $79 per incident. Microsoft is clearly setting the stage for what could be higher costs for support over time. So the question, yes.
One of the other things, so I've just come to realize, you know, through my distributors and that, as far as Microsoft Office 2007, you don't get the CDs with it. All you're getting is a license. So in other words, don't be surprised, folks. Right now, if you buy Microsoft Office, a new machine, you get Microsoft Office with it, all you get is a sticker. And then there's that temporary, like 60-day thing. Well, what you've got to do is go in, activate that, with the sticker that's on the side of your machine. You do not get the CDs.
So if you want to reinstall, too bad.
You got to bring it back to somebody like me, because I had to buy these kits where I can install the initial part on it for you, but then you've got to put in the activation code to activate it and get it going.
There's good customer service from Microsoft. Anyway, the poll this week is, I've paid for Microsoft tech support, and the choices are yes, no, oh, please. The Macintosh, and of course, the Linux. And so far, 103 of you voted. 49% of you say no. 26% say, oh, please. 12% the Macintosh. 12% Linux. And only two of you have, in fact, gone to Microsoft for tech support. That's an interesting statistic. I thought it would have been higher. But, of course, it's still early. Yeah. We'll see what happens in the rest of the poll. But, yeah, Microsoft, it's getting harder and harder for people to actually get anything. When they buy a system, you don't get the CDs.
Yeah,
you don't
like
get...
you say, you're just leasing it.
Yep.
You don't own it. You lease it.
Yep.
And again, folks want...
I mean, I understand that for people like me at RIT. I'm the systems administrator for the E. Philip Saunders College of Business at the Rochester Institute of Technology. And we only get... Well, thank you. We only get one copy, but we put it on multiple machines. I mean, that's our job. But to do it this way... Anyway, listen, when you're done taking the poll... at the bottom of the poll, you'll see a yellow box, and that will take you to my website. If you click on Give Us Your Opinion, you get to my website, asknick.com.
That's
AskNick.com. You ain't kidding, baby. Where you can enter a an actual opinion, because I know that you people just clicking a button doesn't really do it for you. You need to be able to speak. So you can do that. And then take a look around. I put out a newsletter, and there's always some interesting stuff in there. And I've got a forum that has some pretty neat things in it. It's only $15 a year. I can't imagine why you wouldn't pay that. And then come back and check out the Soundbites website, where some of the coolest people on earth live in the forums. And you can see Dave's weekly tips and tricks and all kinds of other interesting things. We'd be glad to have you just explore the world of Soundbites and AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Thank you. Thought I'd catch him off guard. Thought I'd catch him sleeping. Thought I'd catch him combing his mutton chops, but no.
Have you ever flashy thing me?
No.
I ain't playing with you, Kay. Have you ever flashy thing me?
No.
Good one, Rob.
Name that movie.
Name that movie. Men in Black, duh.
Oh, you say duh. I mean, that's only a short little clip.
How many movies have Will Smith saying, did you flashy thing me? I ain't kidding, Kay. Did you flashy thing me? How many? I still like the other Patrick Warburton. You're going to neuralize me. Don't neuralize me, Mr. K. All right, we're going to go back to the phones. We got time? Yeah, we got time. Going to go back to the phones, and our next caller is Wendy from Batavia. Welcome, Wendy. What's your question?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have an HP, and I had the hard drive checked for viruses. Now I have it back and can't find the Windows startup disk or any of the startups. What do I do?
Well, wait a minute. Now, you had it out for service or something?
Yeah, I had a friend of mine check it for viruses and whatever. Now I have it back, and I don't have the initial disk to reboot it or start it, or I'm real computer literate.
Well, what happens when you turn it on?
I haven't hooked it back up because I didn't think I could even do anything with it.
Oh, yes, you should. Everything should be on the hard drive just as it used to be. So you should just be able to plug it all in and turn it on, and it'll start up without any of that other stuff. Whoever you gave it to fix, shouldn't have erased anything unless there was an actual virus on the drive. So just plugging it in, turning it on, starting it up, it ought to work just great.
Yeah, virus removal, all it does is literally just gets rid of the virus. It doesn't get rid of any of your programs or any of your emails or any of the other stuff. It just cleans out the virus.
Oh, wonderful. So well, I feel stupid.
No. Believe me, a lot of people, if nobody tells you, how do you know?
And the only dumb question is the one not asked.
Oh, good. Thank you so much, because I thought I had to buy that new computer with Vista, and I don't want to get that yet.
No, you don't need that yet. Yeah, just turn it on. You should be fine. Now, if it doesn't start, that's a separate set of problems, but I suspect that's not going to be a problem for you at all. Just plug it in the way it was, turn it on, you're good to go.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Wendy.
Have you noticed, though, I mean, Vista compared to when XP came out or even 98? I mean, there was a lot more hype and excitement to get to these operating systems. Vista, it's just not there.
Right. I know it.
I mean, it's just, you don't see the big ads or pushing for it or anything else.
Yep, I know. It's true.
It's just weird.
Well, even Microsoft has said people are going to wait a year before they install it.
We're
going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you at 19 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Call Wham now at 222-1180. *1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers or the One Communications line.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
That 23 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites, and we have a shocking confession for you, Dave.
Well, you know, we were talking off air here, and everybody out there that, you know, has been listening to Soundbites for over 17 years now knows my opinion of Windows ME. But you know what? I can honestly say, and I thought I'd never say this, and it even hurts me to, but I think even ME is better than Vista.
Wow.
In that they changed everything around. The big thing folks have to be worried about, and the big thing is they've changed, you know, like when we went from 98 to ME to XP, even 2000 and XP, things were relatively the same, you know, cute icons and all that, and they didn't reorganize stuff as much.
Right.
The look and feel to Vista is totally going to blow everybody away. Because where things used to be, they're not there anymore. And they had to add more icons to Vista, which is confusing folks even more. And the whole, it's going to be a major learning curve just to find out where things are that were in, say, XP.
Right, right.
It's scary.
Here's another one. Windows Vista security tools that work with Windows Vista have failed tests to see if they can detect viruses circulating online. Microsoft Windows Live OneCare security tool was one of four products that failed independent tests carried out by the Virus Bulletin site. The security testing group found that Live OneCare missed far more active viruses than any other program tested. To pass the test, antivirus tools must spot and stop 100% of the malicious programs used to attack them. When Vista was launched on January 30th, Microsoft Chairman Bill Gates claimed that it was dramatically more secure than any other operating systems. Work began on Vista in 2001, and prior to release, Microsoft said that some of the delay was due to efforts to harden the operating system against viruses and other malicious programs. Version 1.5 of Windows Live OneCare was co-launched with Vista, used the same scanning engine as the security tools bundled with the operating system. Typically, users pay a yearly subscription to use Live OneCare. While Live OneCare did manage to spot 100% of the macro viruses it was tested against, it missed some wild viruses, polymorphic programs, and file infectors. Live OneCare caught 99.91% of the known active viruses it tested against. That left it vulnerable to 37 separate malicious programs. Other antivirus programs that failed the test included G-Data Antivirus Kit, McAfee Virus Scan Enterprise 8.51, and Norman Virus Control 5.90. So those of you who are using Windows Live OneCare, it might be time to switch to AVG or Avast or one of those. So be careful what you do and where you do it online if you're using Vista OneCare. Our next caller is Steve from Brockport, New York. Welcome, Steve. What's your question?
I'm having a problem upgrading my Windows XP Home Install to Windows XP Pro.
Okay.
Well, what happens is everything went fine until it rebooted, and then when I tell it to boot to the XP Pro setup, it gives me an error of AMLOZN7X.SYS cannot be found, and then it forces me to reboot.
Say that again, AMLO what?
ZN7X.SYS.
SYF?
Yep, like a system file.
Did you have Norton on there?
The Norton came on the OEM installation, but the first thing I did was uninstall that.
Okay.
Yeah, I completely do not recognize that file.
One question. Why are you going from home to pro?
Because I'm having problems running with a limited user on the box, and I'd really like to have a power user option available.
Oh, so you're on a network?
Not necessarily a network, but on the box, I run as an administrator and limited user, and out of my pro boxes, I run as administrator and power user.
You can do the same with home. I mean, you can be the administrator in home.
Well, the main issue is that I need the administrator power user separation, not the administrator limited user
separation. Right.
Okay.
I have never heard of this problem, but you're getting a blue screen essentially?
It's not really a blue screen, it's just the black screen with white text after it goes starting window setup, blah blah blah.
Can you start in safe mode?
The XP home install will start, but I can't.
Steve,
start
that's the one thing I was wondering. Now, because it sounds like it didn't replace your home, it just installed it in a separate directory to put pro. So you get your option to either start in the home or the pro mode when you first boot up. Do you have a selection?
Yeah, I have the Microsoft Windows XP Home Edition and the Microsoft Windows XP Professional Setup Options.
What you might want to do...
Whoa, Microsoft Professional Setup Options?
Yes, setup.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like XP Pro installed at all.
Yeah, you got to reinstall it. Finish the install.
I'm sorry, Steve. I can't entirely envision what the problem is. It's going to have to be actually looked at by somebody.
Because, yeah, it looks like you got to continue. It started to do part of the install, and it put it in a separate directory. That's why you're getting the option to either go back to home or do Pro. Pro isn't finished yet.
Yeah, because what it sounds like is it's in the middle of the reboot.
Once it's all said and done, there should be no option to either have home or Pro. It should just be Pro.
Right. So I'm sorry, Steve, but somebody's going to have to look at this. Over the phone, I can't quite envision where you are, what your problem is. Somebody's going to have to look at it. I am sorry. You're going to have to bring it to somebody to check out. I hate to say that, but that I can't quite get there. Ted from Fairport, what's your question?
Hello, guys. I have a blue screen of death issue also. Whenever I start the computer up, I get the error message is IRQL not less or equal to. I looked it up on the internet, and they said it's a hardware issue.
Yeah.
So what I did was I partitioned the hard drive and reinstalled Windows on the new partition to test the hardware, and it runs fine on the new partition. So I know it's not a hardware issue. It's a software problem. When I try starting the computer in safe mode, it still goes back to that blue screen of death. There's some files on the corrupted part that I need to get off. The problem is they have the user they were under had a password, and when I try to look at them through the new install, it doesn't even let me look at them. It says you can't look at them. So then I said, well, let me see if I can get through them with Linux. I ran a live boot CD with Linux. I can look at the files. They're all still there, but they're copy protected. It won't let me copy them. And then I said, well, let me try to reinstall Windows on the bad partition, where when you put it in, it asks you to repair it.
Right, right.
It asks for a administrator password, and that's long been forgotten. I have no idea what it is.
See, if you could pull that, if you could pull that hard drive out and put it in another machine as a second drive.
I did that too, and they're still copy protected. It won't let me look at
it. But you can't get it. Well, you can change that. In other words, you can go into the documents and settings and under the security,
mm-hmm.
change the security and the access to the current machine. So in other words, because you're on another machine, you can get into that, but you've got to change the control on that particular hard drive over to the new machine. It's not as easy. I can do it easier than I can explain because.
But it is possible. It is possible to do, and unless the programs are actually encrypted in some way, you should be able to change.
I don't think they're encrypted because I could look at the files. I mean, I can see them. I can open up the pictures, but I just can't copy them to a new place.
Right, and that has to do with the permissions. You should be able to go into a directory, right-click on it, and say permissions, and then change the permissions to whoever you are now, giving yourself read, write, and change,
What they call total control. And under that button, there's also, I think it's called either access or audit. And you've got to, in there, say that, no, this particular machine that it's hooked up to now has the authority to do this and that.
Okay. And that's under the document settings.
And sharing in that, yeah.
Sharing, okay. Yep. If I could, I got one more Linux quick question.
Very
for
quick.
You. I'm running Ubuntu at home, and I run it through DSL, Lightning Link. It's considerably slower running. I'm running the Linux then when I run it on Windows. I'm thinking there's some kind of setting I missed when I set up the DSL.
There isn't a setting as such, but are you... it could be that whatever card you've got doesn't have a good Linux driver for it.
Okay.
That's certainly a possibility. Now, what do you know what card you have?
No, it's an old box too. It's about 6 years old. That's why I put Ubuntu on it. Kind of took.
Yeah. Well, if it's an older box, it'll run slower anyway. And it may be that you have,
running slower since I switched to DSL. When I had it hooked up to Roadrunner, it was running fine. so that's why I thought there was a problem.
And you're just connected via Ethernet?
It's Ethernet going to a router that goes to the...
Right.
See,
there shouldn't be any change there at all. That's very odd.
Yeah.
Under any operating system, there should be no change because you changed nothing that has any effect on the system itself, right? I mean, there's no change. It's just too Ethernet. It doesn't care what's on the other end. So if you changed the DSL and it got slower, that's
weird.
I don't get that. That's another one that I'm afraid somebody's got to sit at and look at because I don't know what could cause that off the top of my head. The thing you change doesn't touch the box at all.
They're not related. They do be brother, but they're not related.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm sorry, Ted. I'm not sure what to tell you at that point. We'll have to that again will have to be looked at by somebody. I don't have an answer for you there. I'm sorry. I wish I did. All right. Our next, we got plenty of time. Next caller is Dave from Canandaigua. Welcome, Dave. What's your question?
Okay, I got an administrative question, guys. I have tried three or four times to get Frontier DSL, and every time they test and say, you know, the equipment isn't adequate and so forth. Now, I have, in my house, run the lines over to the computer and so forth. I use the high-integrity lines and so forth. But I think my problem is between the road and the house because over the last 30 years there have been ice storms and breaks in the line. They come out and patch them and, you know, whatever.
Right.
My question is, who do I contact at DSL, even if I'm prepared to pay to have the lines rerun from the road to the house? Because I really need... the DSL. I need a faster system.
Well, there are a couple of things that have to be dealt with here. It may not be just the simple fact that there's a bad line between you and the house because that's easily fixed.
Yeah. Right.
The problem is also the distance between you and the central office.
Well, except let me tell you that there are neighbors to the left and neighbors to the right that have DSL.
And they have no issues with it.
No, they don't.
Then, okay. Then, yeah, I would just call Frontier DSL.
Now, when you called them, what did they say?
They say, well, we will test it. And they then come back and say, you know what, we've done our testing, and the equipment, they use the terminology equipment, isn't adequate to support DSL. So, like I said, internally in the house, you know, I've gone to the high-speed wiring and all that good stuff. So I know it's not in the house.
Well, here's the other thing. I'm getting a buzz here when I talk to you. I'm hearing thing.
I'm on my cell phone down near Binghamton, so that's why.
Oh, all right. What I was going to say was you can call them and have them install, tell them you've got inadequate voice line.
Right.
And that they will fix, and if they fix that, that should solve the problem for DSL. If not, do me a favor, and after we get off the line, leave your phone number with Rob, and we will get it to somebody at Frontier to give you a call
let
and
me
find
see what
out
I can
what
do
the story
for you.
Is.
Yeah, and please make sure whoever you talk to, I'm prepared to pay for running a high-speed line, you know, up from the road if that is the issue. So
I'll explain you're ready to run one for them and for me. Okay, not a problem then. All right.
Hang on.
Don't hang up and give Rob your number and name, and we'll get that to the right people at Frontier. Thanks. We're not going to do that a million times. We'll do that once in a while.
This
next
is
caller.
An extenuating circumstance.
Exactly. If his neighbors on both sides get it, he should be able to get it. Our next caller is Jim from Henrietta. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
A couple of days ago, I left my computer on all night long, and when I looked at it in the morning, it had not shut off, but it had gone blank, and usually if you just hit the mouse or something or hit a key, it'll turn back on. It wouldn't do it. I had to shut it down and turn it on, and I got a lot of writing, and it took me some time to finally get it going. Today, when I got on, it opened up, and would not allow me to get any place. And ultimately, I ended up with a blue screen with some whiteboard, which I've never seen before, with some writing on it that said a problem had been detected, and it shut down to prevent damage to the computer. And they said, it said, a process or thread crucial to system operation has unexpectedly exited or been terminated. And it asked me to go into safe mode to try to open it, and I got into safe mode, but it wouldn't accept my password. It wouldn't open up. And it's been, and just keeps seeming to go around and around in circles. And now I am only with a screen that says IBM ThinkPad, entering IBM BIOS setup utility. And that's where it ends. I can't go past it.
So you can when you do get to, you hit the FA key and it allows you to get to safe mode.
It allows the safe mode, but it wouldn't, when I tried to enter my password and username, it wouldn't, it kept opening a window saying it wouldn't accept it. And then
all right, now here's one thing though, Jim.
Well, but now he's only getting the BIOS
I can't
boot
even
up
get
screen.
To that anymore.
Oh, you can't even get to that anymore?
I'm stuck at just the opening screen that says IBM ThinkPad, and then at the bottom. This
you might have a hard drive that's going on you, Jim.
Yeah.
You might have
a
hard drive
like.
Crashing on you. In other words, you might want to take that in and have the hard drive tested out because I think it might have developed some bad sectors that it went that way that now you can't even get into it. It sounds like it's having trouble detecting the hard drive. So that's one for a repair shop to test it out.
We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. We'll talk about the possibility of EMI Music Group selling their MP3s without copy protection. At 41 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Call.
There we go. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm, what is it, D7 or whatever his name is?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I'm Rob Linton.
At 45 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Music company EMI Group PLC, home of the Rolling Stones and Coldplay, has been talking with online retailers about possibly selling its entire digital music catalog in MP3 format without copy protection. The MP3 format, which can be freely copied and played on virtually any device, would allow consumers to play music purchased from any online music store on any digital music device. Currently, music purchased at Apple's iTunes stores, for example, is wrapped in Apple's proprietary version of digital restriction management technology, known as FairPlay, and can be only played on the company's iPod devices. Songs purchased from rival online stores that carry different DRM technology cannot be played on iPods. This has caused some to wonder whether it might be hampering sales. According to the people familiar with the matter, London-based EMI asked the retailers to submit proposals by Thursday, telling the company what size advance payments they would offer in exchange for the right to sell EMI's music as MP3s. One of the unidentified people said EMI would decide whether to forge ahead with the strategy based on the size of the offers. A decision about whether to keep purchasing the idea could come as soon as this Friday. Earlier this week, Apple chief executive Steve Jobs called on record labels to abandon their requirement for online music to use DRM, which we talked about earlier. Steve Jobs said that such restrictions have done little to slow music piracy, and eliminating them would open up the online music market. EMI is the world's third largest music company by sales and home to acts ranging from the Beatles to the Beastie Boys, but some of its performers, notably including the Beatles, do not yet sell any of their music in any digital format. Now, EMI has experimented with releasing singles in the DRM-free MP3 format. In the past few months, the company has released tracks by Norah Jones, Lily Allen, and the band Reliant K. And that's an interesting proposal. I'd buy music that was non-DRM'd. I would. I wouldn't buy most of what I just talked about, but I'd buy some of it. We have Reliant K. We have Reliant R in the back room. Auto Reliant R, I believe. I won't go there. Our next caller is Ed from Canandaigua. Welcome, Ed. What's your question?
Hi, guys. Enjoy the show. Thanks for all the tips that you give us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, I've got an older machine on Windows 98. It hasn't been on the internet in years, and it's recently gone blind. It doesn't see anything from either of the optical drives, and internally, it seems to run normally. By that, I mean it will play the games that originally came on the hard drive. You can run ScanDisk and Defrag. That all looks normal.
Mm-hmm.
Drives, they do spin up, but absolutely nothing happens when you put a disk in to try to feed it into the computer.
A floppy disk?
No, I mean like a CD or something. if you wanted to put it in either one of the optical drives.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That happens actually a lot, Ed.
Okay.
One of two things is, are you a smoker?
No.
Anybody in your house?
The environment was dirty, and I recently blew it out with the aerosol, but the straw was probably like 12, 15 inches from anything in the...
Right, but
maybe the lens is dirty.
Yeah, the lens could be filthy, as a matter of fact. The reality is those are not hermetically sealed drives, and dirt and dust and stuff get into them. You can buy a CD cleaner, a drive cleaner, fairly inexpensively, and run that a few times.
Give that a shot and see if that
works. You'll probably be shocked at how much filth comes off of that. So give that a try, and that's probably where your problem lies. We are going to take another break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Rob Linton, and me, Nick Francesco. When we come back, we'll talk about how Google is opening Google Mail to everybody. It is 49 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 53 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Real quickly, Google's email service is just about ready to accept all comers. Nearly 3 years after the online service leader shook up webmail companies by offering users an unprecedented amount of free storage and displaying ads based on the content of the correspondence. Starting today, the company has removed the invitation-only restrictions on Gmail in Europe, the Middle East, Africa, and Brazil. They will be doing that shortly in North America, most parts of South America, and Asia. And then they'll retain a beta tag to signify that the company still considers the service to be in the testing phase. Getting a Google invitation, of course, hasn't been all that tough since, like, everybody on Earth got 100 of them. But even so, it should be noted that everybody wants one because you get over 2.5 gigabytes of free disk space. So those of you who haven't had one up till now, it'll be coming your way shortly. Our next caller is Ed from Hilton, New York. Welcome, Ed. What's your question?
Yeah, hi. Is there a way to recover files once you've reformatted?
Reformatted the hard drive?
Yeah.
Not any way you can do it.
It is certainly doable, but it ain't going to be cheap.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard that. I thought that System Recover or System Mechanic could do it, but...
No,
not since you've formatted it,
right? Now I was also told there's a $300 system out there. It's called Get Data Back. Would that work?
No, I don't think that's going to get it back for you because you've already formatted it. You're going to need a higher end program than even that, I believe, to get it.
Any suggestions? See, I've lost all my finances for the last 3 years.
Let's put it this way. And
you have no backups?
Well, I thought I transferred it over to our laptop, and apparently it wasn't the right files I transferred.
You still got the hard drive?
Yeah.
And you got it out of a machine?
No, it's still in. I reformatted and just went back over it with my same XP system, but... I'm trying to recover the files that...
No, once you've formatted and then written over those areas, I mean, you're talking high-end forensic software to get at that, and that's going to cost you an arm and six legs.
It's doable. There's a product called Encase and a couple of others, but there's commas in those numbers.
Yeah, big time.
Wow. Okay, well...
I'm sorry.
Sorry, yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Yep.
That's just, especially since what's going to make it harder is that he wound up formatting it, putting a new operating system, which has rewritten over possibly some of those areas where some of his data was. So, I mean, even with the expense, there's still not going to be any guarantee that he's still even going to get that data back, and he could spend easily, $5,000-$6,000 and still wind up with nothing.
Right.
I mean, because on that, there is no guarantee.
Right. Sorry. Our next caller is Kirk from Spencerport, New York. Welcome, Kirk. What's your question?
Okay, guys. I got an interesting one. I have a Windows XP, and I usually turn it off when I'm done. And so the next day, I'll plug everything in, turn it on, and it boots fine.
And then after about maybe 10 or 15 minutes, if I'm in the middle of something, it just shuts right down. It's almost like somebody unplugged it. And then when I go to try to reboot it, it won't reboot. And then I'll let it sit for a few hours, and then I can repeat the whole process again. So I don't know if I have a hardware problem or if I have a software problem.
Or have you double checked to make sure hibernation isn't turned on?
What's
In the control panel under there's a power settings.
Yeah, because what it does is when it powers down, it says power and enable monitor will shut down, and it just won't go through the boot cycle again unless it sits for another few hours.
Did you disable all those power options?
No.
Try disabling those. You don't need them.
Okay.
I mean, they're there to save energy and all this other stuff, but if you're turning it off once you're done,
right.
Just disable all those. You don't need them. And see if that solves your problem for you.
Okay.
All right?
All right, thanks. Well, it appears that we are done for another show. I want to thank everyone who called in. I want to apologize to everyone to whom we did not get. Next week, you'll have to call in earlier and more often. I certainly want to thank everybody who joined us in the chat this week for their comments, suggestions, and stuff like that. We are done. We will be back here next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. Remember that you can join us in the forums on Soundbites. Check out the poll. Check out AskNick.com. Do all of that stuff. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, who was here just momentarily, the great and mighty Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. Thanks for listening to Soundbites on Wham!